best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Yeah, that's the best one yet.
Big O! Showtime!
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
My fly is open.
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no fuddy-duddies that are like it bad. For the show link, go to rectadlgs.org. And IC challenge at linuxgate.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the challenge is about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1075 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joe.
I'm here.
We have Joel.
Good evening.
And Jackie's here too, Joe's wife. I don't know if she's still around.
I'm still here.
There we go.
I'm hiding. Mm-hmm.
Well, just a reminder that Ohio Linux Fest is coming up. What's the date? No, nobody knows.
I gotta Google it.
Ohio Linux Fest. Yes, the date. It's coming up. Murph is giving a talk on TMUX.
He is.
The November 15th. Oh, crud, that's this weekend coming up.
It's next weekend.
Not this. Wait, 7? Yeah, it'll be 7 days from Friday. It's going to be 15th and 16th at the Columbus, Ohio. The Hyatt Regency.
Oh, shoot. I just remembered. I took the day. I had extra days to burn, so actually I might be able to head down sometime Friday.
There you go.
Yeah, I took days off around that because my race is on November 17th. My first 5-kilometer race.
Bravo, sir. So you can go down and...
Yeah, the...
hang out with Murph.
Yeah, a little bit. The expo is on the 16th itself as well. That's when I have to go get my brace packet. So, not exactly sure. I haven't done this one before or any at all, to be honest. I do get like a fleece jacket and a medal, like if I finish. I guess I probably won't get that till the end of it, but then you get like a treat bowl with, you know, it's the hot chocolate 5K.
There you go. Just a reminder, 2 o'clock on Saturday is in the Hayes room, and it will also, I guess, be on YouTube, streamed on YouTube, will be Murph's Introduction to TMUX, 2 to 3 o'clock. Followed by Loving the Leap from Engineering to Management. That's a tough one. I don't know if I can get into that. I wouldn't want to do management. Now, Joe does management, right, Joe? He's managing my last
job. I do a manager's job, but I sure as heck don't have a manager's position.
Yeah.
Or
I'm
pay.
A leader. I'm a leader.
Well, I'm a lead, but I'm doing the manager's job because the manager's in New York.
Yeah, I step in frequently. I wouldn't mind stepping into management, but I wouldn't want to do, like, you know, it's a little different being the manager on the global support team than it is being like a manager on the engineering team, because the engineering teams do most of the work and the manager doesn't really do much. In our term, I would be helping and directing if I ever became a manager, but I don't know if I'd want to do it all the time or not. But
luckily I don't do managing. I did it in some other jobs and I don't particularly care for it. Too many people problems.
Did you do it at the school?
No, I did it. I was the lead at my previous position for a while, and then the team kind of got a little smaller and I didn't have to do that role anymore. I could just do the operations and development. Right. And then the other guy I worked with was front end kind of stuff and back end with me. And we worked together really well. He was cool. I really enjoyed working with Andy, man. He was a great guy. But yeah. And the rest of the team that I worked with there, it got really pared down. But yeah, but prior to that, it was, you know, having to be the first on the line for dealing with interpersonal problems, which, to be fair, there weren't that many. There were some big ones, but it's just I did enough social work in the past that it's just I'm okay now. I'm okay now working on like application problems, not people problems. It helps having those skills though to navigate your coworkers and colleagues and stuff like that, and be viewed positively like that, to have those kind of skills. But anyway, it's if you get the chance to experience it, I would say do it. Maybe you'll like it. I don't know. If you like kind of doing that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, at work this past week, what we did was to comply with some things that we needed to get removed from our system. We had done a cursory removal from being visible in our search system, which meant that it was still technically in the system. People couldn't discover it, and it was still on, some things were still on storage, and so now that has to all be removed. And I was crapping my pants because I know a lot more now than I did when I originally did this. And we were under a time constraint and it was said, let's do it this way. Not realizing that after we did it that way, the very thing that I need to get removed, which is off of storage, one of the big things, I no longer had the link to be able to do that in the system, because that record was deleted, which had the information as to what, where the object was located on storage somewhere. But luckily, it's kind of two systems, and one is the side where it's available for use, and the other side is it's published or whatever. So I still had that it's published side that had all that relevant information that I'm going to. So now I had to modify our job, because it's such is, oh, and I'm still trying to figure this out, because there's primarily videos and images, and then depending on which data pool you pull from, it presents it in a different way. So one of the things that I have to do for the images is also, and videos too. So it's not just deleting them off the CDN. It's purging them from them possibly being in the cache, the Varnish cache, Fastly's Varnish cache. Now, images are fairly simple because there's only one. And then cropping is done through image manipulation on the Fastly side of things. We used to have an in-house program called Minimography that would modify images. Instead of, like, you actually create a crop and then do that to the physical image and save that, it's now just done in software where it defines where it should be, what it should display in the image, as well as whether there's any cropping done or scaling or whatever. So that was, I set that up, got to work on setting that up on our CDN on our side. That was the migration of Minimography to Fastly's image manipulation. That was a lot of, that was some, some crazy work there, trying to replicate that full suite of application that was running. It was on Apache backend that was using, I think it was a home built mini modify tool on Perl, if I'm not mistaken. It was Perl based, and then moving that over to Fastly's extended image manipulation language for the Varnish that they have. It was fun. But now what ends up happening is in our system and the two different systems, I have to discover where the actual image is and what the crops are. And it's similar for videos, that I need to know where the video is, like what of the one of the three storage locations it could be on, where is it? So what makes it challenging is in one record, it's under a, it's in a JSON object is what we get back, but it has an array of crop values. So that array is an array of objects that are crops. And that has a URL in there that we use for purging. In another system, this another way that I get it back is it's in a similar array of objects called renditions. And then in another way, it's a nested object of crops under a key that's defined by the actual crop, like 3x9 or whatever it is. And so I have to get all of that and figure, you know, which one of these is it in? Whatever way you're passing this information and you want to delete this image, I need to then, however you're passing it in, try and discover what the crops are. With videos, it's very similar, but it's renditions for videos. And then in there, I have to pull all that information out to get videos are different than crops. They're not manipulated on the fly. So the different video sizes are saved. Actually, when somebody opens that video and is going to use it, it renders that in a couple of different formats. And I need to know where all that is to get rid of it. And it all, and then it depends on the system. Like there was, it was done one way up until like a year ago, and then that got changed for a completely different way. So paths, it's a nightmare, because all I get is a URL, and I have to translate that into a cloud storage path, which is challenging. And I have to get that all done and then delete all this shit before like December 15th, and we're talking like millions of records. And it took like a solid week or 2 weeks last time to do it. And this is going to take more work. And then I kind of screwed myself in another way, in that the tool was written that you have to pass into it a JSON object, which has all the information in it already. So it also has the ability to, you give it a query criteria and it will spit out a file with those JSON objects in it, right? But what had happened was when I originally created these, I only had it put out the ID and like the friendly ID and the actual asset ID and something like the type that it was or something like that. So all my files that I need to work off of don't have the information I need now. So I have to repass it. We rejiggered the operator that it's using. So now instead of passing in a JSON object, you can tell it, you know, give it a list of the IDs that you want to get rid of, and it'll do that lookup for you and then pass it in to get deleted. So it's a treat and a half, Joel.
Sounds like it.
And then the other guy I'm working with, the guy's helped me with that. I'm also helping him because He's working on a notifications application that uses WebSockets so that users would be notified when something changes in the system. I forget exactly what it is, but he was just setting up a simple node application, a node server, HTTP2 server for doing this. And what we kind of discovered in this whole process was that there's like extra things that we need to do to deploy this in Cloud Run, because it's building a container with it in there and then pulling it out to Cloud Run. You have to tell Cloud Run it's actually an HTTP2 server. It's going to be using that protocol. Otherwise, it automatically converts anything that comes in from HTTP2 to HTTP1. And, you know, that's not desired at all. On the flip side to that is the load balancer itself. That entry for that application on a load balancer needs to have it noted that the protocol is HTTP2. Otherwise, it just defaults to HTTP1. And that was important too. So it was a fun thing getting that thing out there and deployed. Kind of also learned that, and I don't know. I think this is being done on the Cloud Run side of things, but all our node applications that are running in a container are Next.js applications. They all run on port 3000. So when we deployed the container, Cloud Run knew how to reach the application. And I don't think that's a Next server aspect. I think it's Cloud Run recognizing that it is a Next-based application in some way, is passing it to port 3000 on the container, because that's the port that's exposed. Now, with this new application, because it's just not running Next, it's just HTTP2 server, it was originally he had it running on 3000, but when you try to deploy the container, it would complain because it couldn't do a startup health check on it. It was failing to connect to anything on port 8080. So when I said, well, you know, this isn't Next and it's just running the application on that port, can't we just, since it's an HTTP2 server and you need a secure sockets on here, you have that all set up, just run on port 443. And sure enough, that solved it right there. We were able to do that and reach the application then through Cloud Run. So that was a bit interesting. Not that anybody cares, right, Joel?
Sure.
The fun stuff. What about you, Joe? Are they keeping you crazy busy?
Oh, yeah. My manager came into town from New York, so I've been meeting with him all week and coordinating things with him, and they're giving me two more teams to lead.
So congratulations.
I'll be leading three teams, and yeah, and more work, more fun.
Same pay. Oh, that sucks.
As usual.
Does it take any of the other responsibilities off your plate?
I'm able to kind of delegate a bit more because of the new role that I'm taking on. I have one person that's like really solid on my old position. So she's going to take on some more, because I've been kind of handing this to her for a long time now, because we were expecting me to like move away from the position entirely.
Uh-huh.
So she's solid and she can do it, and I'll just be there to give an assist when it's needed and help out with some of the scheduling and some of the pushing things amongst the various developers all over the world. But the new team, the new two teams, essentially, brand new, their old position got dissolved, and so they're taking over a whole set of applications from another team that's moving on to something else. So we'll be setting up the new processes and things, and I've done that type of thing before, so I think it will be fun and hopefully fruitful and maybe lead to me taking on higher pay, since I already got, you know, the promotion a year ago, and that's what it, that's the amount of time that it usually takes to get the raise.
Right.
So hopefully I get a raise in like February.
I hope I get a raise at all.
Well, yeah, because the cost of living has increased so much in the area that I'm in, if I don't get a raise, I'm going to have to look for another job. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That stinks.
Yeah.
It does. Well, it's like, my thing now is that, you know, my manager will, she's always willing to help and to hop in, but she needs to really stop doing that. like she did that to me today, and I'm like, I kind of knew what I was doing here, but you know, it's like, but I'm like, you know, when she starts barking things at me and stuff, when we're on a Zoom sorting something out, I just do whatever she tells me to, even though I really know what to do. She just can't stop. Not to mention the fact, I'm gonna get on her in my one-on-ones and says, "Hey, have you scheduled a vacation yet? You know, you need to take time away, you know, because she, I mean, I'm leaving time on a table this year only because I was just dumb, you know.
But are you leaving time on the table because you really can't fit it in anywhere?
At this point, yeah. For the rest of the year, yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's why I like this week, I had a half day on Monday. Unfortunately, longtime pastor of my church and the guy who was responsible for our church being where it is, he passed away on last
week.
Why
not take half an hour, leave half an hour early, or take an extra half an hour at lunch?
I did that last year. I'm not allowed to do it again this year.
Why not?
So, like, are they going to pay you for the time?
No, I don't care. It doesn't bug me any.
How many days you losing?
It's not that much. Well, my problem is with my tenure, I get like 4 or 5 weeks a year. But you know, it's gonna be okay because it ain't happening next year because I'm planning backpacking trips. I get outfitted with my oral appliance, unfortunately it won't be this year because they can only, the next appointment was in January, so I'm like, okay, January 15th. I don't know if they're gonna do the scan on my mouth at that point and get it ordered or how that's all gonna work, so I guess I'll find out then. But once that happens, planning on doing some backpacking plus maybe some car camping too. Since I have that tent for the back of my Traverse, so just things like that, you know, I'll probably start off with doing some car camps just so that I can test some of the.
Well, make sure you get a good pad to put down on the bed of your truck.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They've got some really nice ones because that will save you from dying.
Yeah. I have the tent that goes over the end of the tailgate, so that should be fine.
What do you mean it goes over the end of the tailgate?
Yeah, so what you do is you open the tailgate, right? Yeah. And it goes, basically covers everything, like from, like it has these straps that will hook in around the wheel wells, and it goes all the way down below the bumper, and has an awning that kind of, like gives you about 5-6 feet of space underneath of it that's covered, you know, from rain. And then when you climb in, you can zip it shut, and it at least has screens on the end of your car so that you get some air circulation when you're in the car at night.
So you, wait, what kind of vehicle do you have?
Let me see if I can find it. Chevrolet Traverse is a large SUV.
You know, I'm thinking it's a pickup truck, and you have a
No.
You're laying down in the bed of a pickup truck. I'm like, that's not much of a tent if it's just hanging over the edge of the pickup truck for some reason.
Don't forget to get your luggage lock so you can put on your zippers.
I'm not concerned with that. Whenever you use it,
don't have to worry about people taking stuff or getting into your car if you walk away.
I can always take the end piece off if I need to.
How do you have the door open without the light? The lights inside coming.
Mine turns off.
There's switches on them.
Okay.
I'm on my van. I can turn off all those.
Yeah, you can turn those off with a switch. There's a switch right on it here. I've got the one.
I guess that makes sense. But having that back gate open, even if you turn off the lights, there isn't anything that drains the battery on that, is there?
Shouldn't be. Yeah, as long as you have the light off.
Like, I know with the Fit, I can turn the light off, but there always seems to be, like, one light in there that's
the exact
goes on.
One I have, actually.
Mine is where I can adjust the brightness inside the van, and if I roll it all the way down, it turns all of them off.
Right.
That works out great when we're traveling, because I just leave the lights off and go and get when I do my stops.
Oh, there you go. I got it. That's nice.
Nobody else is awake. If the dog's asleep, why do I have to get out and take him too?
It's also got straps that hook it up on the luggage rack too, so that it stays up there. I actually got it for, believe it or not, I got it for nothing. Nothing except for maybe shipping, because I got both my vehicles with Chevrolet and GMAC financing. Every time I make a payment, I get points into my Chevy Rewards. When one day I logged into the app and I saw I have had a ton of points, so I ordered this and I ordered a cargo cover that will cover the stuff in the back. I'm trying to think if I have the third row down. No. It just covers the back cargo area, but like if you fold the third row down, it won't cover that section. So it just covers just the back cargo area. So, at least my son got. We've had some more warranty issues on Luke's tracks. We got a. He had a blower motor go out and again, and we're waiting a couple weeks on a door actuator for the locks. Last time I buy a car made in Korea, because that Chevy Trax is made in Korea. But yeah, this is probably how I'll start with it, because I'll probably start picking up things like a backpacking stove. That's probably one of the cheapest things I'll have. I'll get a trying to think, the cup/pot that I would use is a titanium one. I know what brand it is. I just got to look it up, but, and then a spork, and basically, learn how to use that. And that's the important thing before I go backpacking. I want to make sure I know how to use all the gear, so that I know how to set the tent up. I'll have the tent, whatever tent I end up buying that's not the one that goes on the car. I'll have practice setting it up.
Don't forget to hit the Dollar Tree, dude.
Dollar Tree?
Those little, they're called crummers. They're little brooms that are about the size of your hand.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a lot of stuff. A lot of your stuff that will survive pretty good when you keep your stuff dry. Just dollar store.
Yep. I'll probably, and that's the one thing I think of probably getting is, and we don't have a massive problem with bears here, but I'll probably get trending money to get the a bear canister versus doing a bear hang, so that I, you know, basically the whole idea is to keep the food away from the bears and the food away from you. So you would take your canister and put like 50 feet away from your campsite. And then that way, if the bear does manage to crack open your bear canister, then you're not in danger. But so things like I got things, some of the things I have that I've used on the Mammoth March, I can use for that. Like I got trekking poles already. I don't think I'm not thinking about upgrading those until I bend the fuck out of them, which is possible because they're aluminum. I don't know if I want to go with carbon fiber poles or not, but start off with doing some stuff here in Ohio and contemplating doing things like, well, I wouldn't probably do a backpacking trip necessarily, but the event that I did in Ohio, they do also at Letchworth State Park in New York, and it is gorgeous. So I so want to do some hiking up there. But I'm just excited that it's probably going to happen. So, you know, the only thing I'm a little bit concerned about is I do have some shitty teeth that I probably should go and get taken care of at the dentist, but I want to make sure, you know, we'll see. Ironically, the guy who does the place you go to get the oral appliance is a dentist. So, and they're actually changing it up. I need to actually, this is one of the things I wanted to do at work today, but didn't get a chance to. They had Zooms because we got open enrollment for our health insurance. And instead of having separate dental and health, they're all wrapping it all under our Aetna plan. And I'm hoping it gets better because every
dental... It won't. Dental's still going to suck.
Yeah, dental usually sucks anyway. You know. Because I'd love to actually have my bad ones pulled out and just some either implants put in or a denture made.
Oh, I had a lot of my teeth redone 3-4 years ago, and now I have a couple of them that need a bit of patching up. But right.
I'm not the best at going to the dentist.
I'll go. It doesn't bother me. The only thing that bothers me about it is how much it friggin' costs.
That's what bothers me more than the pain.
And it's not like I, you know, don't take care of my teeth. I take care of my teeth. They just freaking fall apart.
Yep. So we'll see what happens. There's multiple different kind of appliances they can give you. Plus, you know, if for some reason that doesn't work out, I can spend the, let's see, I figured this out. For a camping setup, it would be roughly $1,800, because the machine itself, because I wouldn't want to take the one I have, it's just used too much power. So I would go with either a ResMed Mini or something similar. That's about $900. The Metastorm batteries, I would get two of those. Each one of those is a little bit under $400. And then the solar panel, which I think is right around the $100 or $200. Because the plan would be is I would, while I'm hiking, I would have the panel tied to the back of the pack and hooked up to the battery in the pack. That way, that one's being charged as I'm hiking, and I have two of them, so one of them's always charged, the other one's always charging. So those batteries on the ResMed Air Mini would last approximately I think it's six to 12 hours. So that would last a night of sleeping, two nights maybe if you're sleeping right around 6 hours. So I might be able to get two nights out of a pack. So if I go on a, you know, like a weekend trip, one pack should probably be fine. So I could probably start off with something like that first. So, but right now, we'll probably be things like I said, car camps. And then also, when I do a backpacking, probably the first time I do a backpacking one, I'll probably be feet from my car, because the metro park that's closest to my house has free campsites. I don't have to pay anything. I just have to call the ranger and say, hey, I'm going to camp in the park tonight. And they literally have pads, basically it's like a gravel covered area where you can set your tent up at. And they even bring you firewood for free, if I remember right. So I can basically go haul it all down on my pack, like I'm gonna, you know, like it would be in hiking in the woods, set up the tent and camp site, and then just go for a hike, you know. And then go to bed, wake up in the morning, go for another hike, and then tear down camp and go home. So start off easy, just to see if I like it. I'm pretty sure I will, because I love camping.
It's a good time.
Best part of going camping is going places where your phone don't work. Ba-doom. But you can always take pictures with it, even if it's not connected to a cell site. That's the other thing, too. Some of the things I've been thinking about, especially now since it's starting to become more common for phones, to especially since Apple brought out the SOS features for this satellite. Google has it now with my Pixel 9 Pro. So if I don't have an alternative like a Garmin EnReach, which I kind of would prefer, I could use my phone just in case I get an injury or something and I need to be taken out. But there are reasons that you might want to go with the EnReach versus or an EnReach device. The EnReach Mini is the one I would be looking at, or whatever the latest they have is. And that is an extra fee. It depends on what plan you get with how much it costs. But you can also, and it's kind of important when you're doing wilderness and you're out, you know, away from cell, to have some sort of device like this. And EnReach usually has a plan where you can add like SAR insurance, so that if you're in the middle of the wilderness and you need to be airlifted out, it doesn't cost you thousands of dollars for that to happen. So one of the hikers I watched, she's done the Triple Crown. She had a Apple Watch, and her Apple Watch was telling her that she was going into AFib, and she felt horrible. And she had to press the SOS button on her EnReach, and they charged her like $6,000 just for the airlift. So yeah, it's a significant thing. So you want to make sure that if you're doing any of that kind of stuff,
that's not much. I mean,
well, it might be more than that. I have to go back and watch her video.
We had to call just a regular ambulance for our middle child. She was our youngest at the time. But they sent out the pediatric ambulance, and that trip, which would have been maybe 10 miles, maybe 15 miles, cost about 10 grand. Or they tried to charge us. What was it, 15? Jackie says it was 15,000 that they tried to charge us. You can unmute and talk about it. But that was just for an ambulance ride. So I imagine a life flight would be much more expensive.
Yeah, I don't know the exact figure. It's been a while since that video came out, so I'd have to go back and rewatch it. But it's definitely a thing to keep in mind. She ended up having the SAR insurance, and what was even worse with her is she was between jobs and didn't have health insurance. So... But that's why in the Underreach itself, the Underreach Mini that I'm looking at is a little bit below 300. And I think the plan is like maybe $50 a month or something. At least the one I would look at. And a nice thing with the Underreach, so the way it kind of works is it will kind of pair over Bluetooth with your phone and an app. So you can actually use it for, depending on which plan you have, you can use it for satellite messaging from the Wilderness 2. So, like, so for example, as I go to set up camp for the night, I can send a message via the Underreach system to my wife and says, "Hey, I'm setting up camp for the night." That way, she knows where I'm at, and I'll text her in the morning when I hit the trail again. Again, I probably won't buy that device right away just because, mostly because I have that, you know, for nothing on my Pixel. So, and the nice thing about the Underreach devices is they do have like you can track your progress on it, on the device itself. So the consumer premium is $50 a month, and that gets you emergency SOS messaging, which that's available on every plan, check-in messages and reactions, unlimited on those, unlimited text messages and weather requests, so you can automatically hit the button and get weather requests. You get 50 photo and voice messages, live tracking, so, and that's unlimited on the live tracking with 2-minute intervals. It's a $39 activation fee and then $50 a month. So, and you can, I think the new plans also let you switch, like, so for, if I don't want to do the premium plan, which would, go down to standard, SOSs will be included, check-in unlimited, 150 text messages and weather requests, or 25 photo and voice messages, and unlimited live tracking with a 10-minute interval. So, and that's a little bit cheaper on that, like $10 cheaper. So, but it's worth it. And I don't know if you can go like month to month on it. So like, for example, turn it on only when you're in the hiking season, when you're going to be doing those remote camps, something like that. I'll have to investigate that when the time comes, but it's actually not a bad thing to have though. Even if you're just like if you're on a road trip or something, cause I can count lots of times where I've been driving on a long road trip where we didn't have any phone reception at all. So the nice thing is if you got in an accident or something, you'd have this along with you. So Underreach has multiple different kinds of devices. I would probably go with the smallest one I can go with. But other gear, you know, I need a pack, sleep pad, sleeping bag. Already said the stove, some sort of food storage, and then, you know, clothing's not something I'm worry too much about, because there's a lot of different options on clothing that's economical, and some of the clothes I have already would work just fine for it, you know. I already have a Patagonia Puffy. I absolutely love it. I've been able to wear it at least once. Hasn't been that cold enough to where I would really need it yet, but I'm ready for the winter. You like to run outside when it gets cold, Dan?
It depends on how cold it gets.
Yeah.
If there's ice on the ground, I'm not a fan of running in
the ice. I can get that totally, but, right.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, if it gets usually under 30 degrees, I don't go running because that starts to get a little too cold for me.
Right.
But
let me see what the weather is going to be for my first 5K run.
So, I mean, I don't know how the weather is where you are, but here it's been beautiful.
Oh, it's been like 70s and 80s earlier in the week, I think.
Well, it's been between 40 and 70 here, which I'm going to say has been nice for the last couple of days. But even like a week ago, a week and a half ago, it was still like in the 90s. So
here I'm looking at it. It doesn't go out all the way to race day right now on Google Weather, but the temperature for the Friday before is predicted to be 48, and the low is predicted to be 32. So it's likely I'll probably be wearing some joggers for the race.
That sounds like a nope weather. Yeah, pretty sure. But I found as I get older, my tolerance for variation in weather has
your tolerance
gone down
for nope
significantly.
It goes more.
Yeah, there's a lot more nope than there used to be when it comes to the weather.
Now, yesterday's exercise was I combined two different things I had to do yesterday in one thing. I grabbed my ruck plate in my pack and strapped it on my back and walked to the polling place and back.
Well, I've been getting my 10K steps since my boss was in town and having to walk back and forth between a couple of buildings.
Nice.
So I think I got like 14,000 steps or something yesterday with all the craziness going on. And then like today, I'll probably make the 10,000, but probably heard me over there lifting. I decided to slap 100 pounds aside on the... on the dumbbells and do incline bench press. So 200-pound incline bench press, which I think is pretty solid for reps of six. And then
beast mode.
And then dropping down to 60 pounds on a side, so 120 total. So
I am going to, after the show, I am going to have to go do a night walk, and I'm hoping it's not rainy.
Well, I'll probably take my dog for a walk before we put him to bed. Try to make sure he gets, walked at least twice a day.
So I am at 8,262, so I got about 1,700 to go, which I should be able to do that by just walking down to the end of the neighborhood and back.
I'm at 8,400 right this second, and the walk around the block should add about 2,000, so...
Now, Monday, I went full on beast mode since I took half day, so I had a lot more time to go to the gym Monday morning, so I did full body strength training. Leg press, I did 240. Yeah, 240 in leg press, 240 on calf extensions. 100 on leg curls and leg extensions, and then 240 on the ab crunch machine.
Calf extensions? Do you mean calf raises?
Essentially, yes.
Okay, so is that standing or seated?
It's a seated deal.
Okay.
And I'm starting to ramp up weights. I'm like, 80 or 90 on the... arm curls, about
two-handed,
the same.
I assume.
Yeah, two-handed. Yeah, okay. It's a machine. So I'm starting to ramp up my weights and stuff. And some of the things I'm thinking of picking up soon is I watched this video on YouTube which is actually a podcast that puts on YouTube as well as audio called Trail Tales. And they had this guy on there, and the theme of the show was 5 Reasons I Suck at Hiking. And some of the biggest things that they said on there was, because a lot of hikers, especially through hikers, you're going to see they're going to look lanky and skinny because they dropped a whole bunch of weight. But not just fat, they lost muscle mass. The recommendations of this guy on this show was to make sure that before pre-hike that you're doing weight training. He suggests trap squats and squats in general just to help strengthen your legs. Also to strengthen your upper body so that you can use your arms to pull you out of and pull you up rock scrambles and stuff like that.
All good suggestions. You should definitely maintain the weight training before doing a heavy cardio event like a hike. But also, you need to remember that you need to bring some carbs with you. You need to cal up before you go, and you need to make sure that you're bringing enough calories with you that you're not burning off your muscle, because eventually that's all that's going to be left.
Through a long through hike.
Well, if you're doing a lot of cardio of any kind, including hiking, then you want something high energy to be able to toss at yourself. If you're getting low in body fat percentage, if you're fairly like higher in body fat percentage, I would say still bring some kind of protein snacks. That way, if your body is needing protein in order to be able to continue on, it's getting it somewhere other than
of that. I've got some new protein stuff that I've been trying. Quest makes great stuff. Oh, they got muffins now. Have you tried those yet?
I haven't tried the muffins, no.
They got blueberry and chocolate chip. They're a little dry, but the one thing I haven't actually tried yet was throwing it in the microwave for a few seconds. That might help with the dryness a little bit. But I got those. I got Robert Irvine Fit Crunch Bars. And I still have a handful of ready clean protein bars. And I actually leave those up here in the office so that if I get a snack or if I'm on a long call or something, grab one of those versus running downstairs to get chips or something. I also have some Redefine protein oatmeal pies. I don't know if you've tried those yet or not, but they're delicious. I got the ones I have are the chocolate Skippy ones. It's got peanut butter in the middle of them.
That sounds good.
Yeah, and those are average, like I think the Robert Irvine ones, Fit Crunch ones, are about, it's either 13 or 16 grams protein. Those muffins are a little lower. They're right around 10 or 12. The Ready Clean is right about 12. And those Skippy ones are 16. But the nice thing about the Mammoth March itself, though, is they do have, like, the aid stations. Like, every other station's going to have food. So you don't really – I mean, you can pack stuff for the first few miles, but honestly – you know, or I would say the first few miles, or the like, if you have specific things that you want that they're not going to have, and you can basically tell with them by just looking at the partner. The partners are usually the ones that are providing the snacks. So Ready Hydration, which I think that might be Element, Ready Premium Hydration, because that's what they had. was Element Sticks, Rainstorm Energy Drinks, Jessica's Natural Foods, which I didn't get any of those, Like Air, which is like a puff corn thing.
Right.
And then they had like peanut butter and bananas. So like peanut butter and jelly and bananas. One thing I did when I reviewed the event after I finished it, I said, it would be nice if you had something other than just peanut butter and jelly because I'm not six. Granted, I don't mind peanut butter and jelly, you know, but it's like, it'd be nice if you had like bologna or something. I guess I can't complain too much, though. It's free, so.
Yeah.
The energy drinks were good. I've tried the Rainstorms before. The one I grabbed on the event was the strawberry kiwi, which is okay. Not my favorite. I've tried the grape one they had on there that I didn't get, but that was okay. But for like when I do like my back, like a backpacking weekend or something like that, you know, I plan on taking like quite a bit of calories with me. You know, I'll have a lunch, supper, breakfast with me. You know, like if I go, like say if I went, did like a Friday night hike in somewhere, set up camp, I might have a dinner maybe before I start the hike, depending on how late it is. And then, at the end of the hike, have dinner and then breakfast and lunch the next day and then real food, when you get home. But if I ever want to do, like, my dream would be to, do a through hike from Springer Mountain, Georgia to, Mount Katahdin. And the thing that scares the willies out of me and the one thing I had to really physically prepare for is the White Mountains in Vermont, as well as Mount Katahdin itself in Baxter State Park. But that may not happen until I retire. What you doing, man? You washing clothes?
Aren't you lifting?
Oh, maybe that was Joe.
Me? Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could talk about my work things, but I really can't. Not today. The ones I had were just odd and stuff that no one would ever see unless you're using our product.
Yeah, there's always a lot of technical details that I'm not allowed to talk about, so, you know.
Yep.
You get the managerial stuff.
Yeah, we got, at least we got our second LAC resource, and Bangalore got one of their I think we're going to have their makeup resource soon, too, but... once the LAC resource is up to speed, he starts on the 19th, and we can start adding him to the on-call rotation, which means, let's see, 5 people in the rotation, so it'll be once every 5 weeks for on-call. Well, okay, for primary on-call, if you're secondary, the way the tree works is if the primary doesn't pick up the freaking page, the secondary gets paid. The secondary doesn't pick up the freaking page, my manager gets paid, which means we don't want it to go out of the secondary, which means I take my phone with me when I'm secondary, even though it rarely goes off.
That sucks,
Joe,
though.
Well, it does suck to be on call. Which do you guys use a specific app or something for pager stuff?
Victor Ops?
No, They just call my
Victor
phone.
Ops. Okay. Yeah, we use pager duty. And pager duty works. You know, it's pretty good. Fortunately, so far this week we've had some incidents, but they've happened tail end of Bangalore shift, beginning of my shift. So, but that's been my last couple days. Hopefully, we don't have an issue, but we'll find out. I've got tickets open with our one database vendor because we keep having this issue. Does
Fall asleep there already?
Nah, I'm tired, man. It was a late night last night.
Oh, yeah.
But
what were you saying?
The issues that we're getting are circulating around the PAM module, because we're seeing these PAM errors.
Yeah,
error seven, I think.
Is he running the?
Yeah.
What is it? Pluggable authentication module. Is that what PAM stands for?
Yep.
Pluggable authentication module. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, these are authentication failures we're seeing. And what ends up, these are using a wallet it's called a Credman wallet is what we call it, for a database access. And for whatever reason, we have to keep retagging this wallet. We don't have to rebuild it. You know, we just have to keep retagging it and it's for SAML authentication.
What does that mean? Like, what does retagging it mean?
Basically, I go in the directory where the wallet exists and say credman-retag, and that's it.
Well, what does retagging do?
It, like, for example, if there's any, like, kind of encryption that's specific to the instance that you're on, like kind of like, not like copy protection, you know, but like
right.
Making sure you're secure. And if there's a hardware change or something that causes a change, it could change the tagging in the wallet.
Oh, okay. So,
so
if these are running on containers, right?
They are not.
Are they running on bare metal?
No, they're not running on bare metal either. They're running on AWS CC2.
Oh, that's what I was just about to ask. Okay, so if they're running on right. AWS and your machine, like that instance gets flagged as being, as needing to be either restarted or provisioned and moved somewhere else,
yep.
Would that cause a reason for a need for retagging?
Well, if that's actually happened, I don't know. I mean, usually what happens is when AWS triggers that, hey, you need to do a restart, it will trigger an incident
right.
to our engineering team. Then the engineering team will schedule a reboot, right? Otherwise, it will reboot itself if you don't do that, right? But unfortunately, that's not happening.
There are some times when they have a catastrophic failure, though, and they just have to move everything off on this right. another system.
Right,
and you typically wouldn't. So, what's causing that problem, though? Do you know?
We don't know yet. We don't know yet. So, we're starting to think it might be a cron job or something. But we'll have to find out if it happens tomorrow. One of the first things I'm going to do is look at the date timestamp on the wallet, and see if it's been updated. And then at that point, we got to figure out, well, who's doing the updating. So, and it's just this one client, which is one of our older clients, one of the first ones that have been in the cloud and doesn't have all the same standards that all the other ones do. You know, so it's all specific to the product, so it's not necessarily how it's deployed or anything like that.
Okay.
So.
Well, good luck in figuring that one out.
It's a pain in the butt one. And what's funny is I had almost the exact same issue happen for a Windows client today. But in that one, it ended up being permissions on a couple folders. So, and that one I have to investigate and figure out why the hell that happened. I don't know that we can, but.
Somebody got the wrong permissions.
Or it could be one of those things, too, where they got lucky and it just fucking worked. And then all of a sudden it didn't work, and then we found it, and we made it so it works reliably, you know?
Yeah.
But, hey, I got my first patch to Android 15.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, Android 15 came out in October, late October, middle October, but I got the security update today from Verizon. Well, not Verizon, from Google. I actually fixed some things on it, like one of the bugs, and I did kind of notice it, but it was kind of nitpicky. So, you ever have like keyboard, then like you type something in, then you have to make the keyboard to go away so that you can see the button on a web page or something you have to press, right? Well, when you hit the button to make the keyboard go down, if you didn't hit it exactly right, it would kind of not do what you expected it to do. So they fixed that. So now if you stab that the down arrow to make the keyboard go away, it pretty much works every time. There's a few other little things, and of course the latest security updates and stuff like that. But I mean, Android 15 has been a non-event for me. It's starting to become like same thing when a new version of Ubuntu comes out, it ain't no big deal anymore. Of course,
it's just not that special, huh?
Yeah,
it's not like an Ubuntu release.
No, Ubuntu releases aren't that exciting anymore either, to be honest.
Dare you? It's not like the next Ohio Linux Fest, November 15th.
Yeah.
Wait, is it 15th and 16th?
Yes, 15th and 16th.
15th and 16th. And speaking of that, we got to close up. I am tired, too. It was a late night.
We did, man.
So I wish everybody well. It's hard to believe we are, what? Is it 2 weeks till Thanksgiving?
Yeah, something like that.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, I guess we got to start figuring out what we're cooking this year for Thanksgiving.
I know what I'm cooking. I'm making a maple bacon cheesecake.
That doesn't sound like turkey.
Right?
No, we're going to my sister-in-law's.
Alright, well, we could talk more about that next week. I'm going to play us out. Thank you, everybody. Yeah. Have a great and peaceful week. Here are your outros.
I am short.
Oh my god. It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
All right.
I might go see a presentation on Friday.
Don't forget on Saturday, merch presentation, baby.
Mm-hmm.
No CPAPer machines. All right, let me see here.
Yeah, I got an update on that. Ain't going to happen this year. But it will.
What am I doing? 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 Where am I? Nope. Yeah, there we go. This is 1,075. Dave couldn't make it tonight. He's out of town.
Mm-hmm.
this town didn't get flooded away too bad.
Hey, don't forget to mention Ohio Linux Fest coming up.
Oh, crap. You know
that's
what?
Right.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was actually, for some reason, I thought Ohio Linux Fest happened and you were there, and I was going to say, oh, Murph's around, he could tell us about Ohio Linux Fest, but it hasn't happened yet?
No, it is in the future, so I cannot tell you how it went yet.
Right.
Can you make something up, and then we'll see if it matches the reality?
I know,
I'm
like, dude. Can you make something?
I don't know. I got a talk accepted, though, so I'm a happy guy.
And what you talking to be on again?
Yeah, I got to run on.
T-Mux.
And what you talking to be on again? T-Mux, that's what you just said it was.
Yeah.
You all right there, Joel? You hearing an echo?
Yeah. I'm not getting an echo.
Okay. Just making sure.
Okay. Nope, I got to actually. I have to go to Linux Fest to, well, that area anyway, to go get my race packet, because my race is the day after.
At the convention center?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Why am I echoing back? No, I'm not.
No, you're not, no.
Am I echoing now?
No.
I don't hear an echo.
Joel, do you hear an echo when I'm talking? Like
no.
Right now?
No. Because
I'm trying to determine whether it's your mic when it comes on that it echoes.
Let's see if it's mine. I just turned mine on.
All right, well, hold on. Let me see. I heard it for a second, but it wasn't like it was before. All right.
Okay.
Let's get this going. 1,075. Boom.